the only thing we could really throw at it to fix something was our own time and energy. So looking back, I regret that we spent so much time and energy on that project, knowing that we delayed progress that we would have made in the market if we hadn't had our attention solely focused on that project.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And I've got another great guest joining us today, and you are in for a treat. We have a very seasoned real estate investor that began his investing career while on active duty in the Marine Corps. And today you're going to learn how this individual has taken a no-nonsense approach to generating opportunities for his partners while also solving difficult problems for individuals and families, oftentimes facing challenging situations. So let's get into it. Without further ado, a special welcome to our guest, Ed. Ed, appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, brother. Thanks for having us. It's so fun to connect again. You and I have run into each other in a couple of different places now, so to be able to jump on and do this together with you is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. And man, you were a tough guy to get scheduled, I'll be honest. But we got you. We got you.
We had some moving parts over the summer, but it's fun. We're back home for a little bit, and this was at the top of our list to do that. So it's
awesome.
Great.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely excited to have you on. And guys, if there's one thing I could share with you, when Ed and I met a couple months ago at a conference in California, we had a mutual friend introduce us, and they just shared their experience of going out to visit Ed. He's in Charlotte, North Carolina area. And without even really knowing Ed, Ed just took him around, showed him Charlotte. And so you're going to get glimpses of that in our conversation today, just the go-giver attitude that Ed has. And I know we're going to hear about how he's been able to bring that into his business as well. So Ed, why don't you just take a couple minutes and just share with our listener a little bit about who you are and what you do today, and then we'll take it back and start talking about your journey.
Okay. So today, a business partner and I operate a business, CLT Buyers, and it is effectively a wholesale business that we operate so that we can cherry pick the best deals that come through that machine and still find ways to monetize those leads that don't necessarily fit our buy box for a whole variety of reasons, location, condition. There's a lot of different things going on there, of course, but we have established ourselves as kind of one of the varsity teams in the Charlotte market, and are also subject matter experts on creative financing techniques. So seller financing, lease options, subject twos, wraps, kind of everything in between there we're willing to do. And yeah, it makes every day really fun for us. There's really no exit strategy that we can't deploy. We're currently holders of rental property. We do flip properties. We will wholesale. We will assign. I happen to be licensed. So kind of every tool in the toolkit we can pull out if we needed to.
And the incredible thing that Ed and his team are able to accomplish, not all real estate transaction is your cookie cutter, 20% down. Everybody's got great credit. They've got time to look to buy. Right. In a perfect world, there's a lot of situations where people might need that money now, or they lost a family member, or the house needs to be sold, but it needs a $100,000 remodel in order to get rid of it. So Ed and his team have really been able to brand themselves and really be able to provide these types of solutions to people in the Charlotte market, which is awesome. And you're able to serve people in different needs at different points in their life.
You mentioned in the intro, but so I grew up in a home that kind of service was kind of a central hallmark of how we grew up. And then the Marine Corps experience was kind of a further reflection of that. And being able to continue the business has really been an effective way to continue to deploy that service mentality into our business. Of course, we're going to make money along the way. That's a given. But it's kind of, once you've built the business to a certain size, it kind of becomes a secondary thing to how can we use the tools and expertise that we've developed in ways that are effective. And it makes every day a lot of fun.
If you're listening to this, if you're new to our podcast, you'll pick up on that with a lot of our guests, very, very successful business owners, but maybe they initially got into business to make money, to create a more comfortable life for them, their families, whatever the case is. But you'll often see that the seasoned operators, the seasoned business owners we have, really have a strong desire to give and to serve. And they're able to find a way to utilize their business and what they've grown to do that, to help and serve others. So it's super cool seeing how that all works out. So Ed, let's take it back. Obviously, this is a business and entrepreneurship podcast, and everybody, a lot of people might be looking at you today and be like, oh, look at Ed. He's got it all figured out. He got lucky. Everything's all sunshine and rainbows for him. You and I know that's a load of crap. There's probably a lot of things that you and your team had to go through to get to where you are today. So we'll definitely talk about that, but let's take it back. When did this entrepreneur journey for Ed really begin?
So I ended up joining the Marine Corps because I needed a way to pay for school, right? I didn't grow up in a family that, like, you know, I was going to be able to go off to whatever school you want to pick. That was never even really contextually something that was possible with the environment that I grew up in. In fact, wealth wasn't even something we talked a whole lot about in our family. Both my parents were public school teachers. So I developed a love for teaching and learning and those things, but not necessarily a lot of skills around financial development. So go off into the Marine Corps and I get stationed and I'm a young Marine. And one of the things that's not really possible or is challenging is you can't really go get a second job while you're working in the Marine Corps, and your payroll's pretty set. Like, if you've only been a young guy and you've only been in this so long, you're not getting a whole lot of money. So like a lot of folks, the journey starts with, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and thought, well, this might be a tool that I could use. And Zillow was a thing back then. So started looking around on Zillow and found actually the first property I ever purchased as an investment property. And I happened to find it on Zillow. I found it at like 10 p.m. at night, and I literally got in my truck that night and I drove like 35 minutes out into the rural countryside, and I'm out there with flashlights looking in the windows and everything.
And fake at home, I presume.
Well, thankfully it was. We didn't know that at the time, and I've learned a little bit now. Maybe I wouldn't do that now, but as a young Marine, I didn't really think about too much of a risk of all that. But look, and it starts slowly, right? So you buy the first one, you learn some tools, and then my journey was a lot like moving out of one house, moving into another, renting out that other one, then moving into another, renting it out. And that was 2005 up to, say, about 2010 or 2013. But 2013 is really a pivot point in our journey where we began to learn about creative financing. We began to learn about private money, which obviously the listeners of your podcast are going to have a deep understanding of. But the importance of private money in any business, but specifically real estate, and the ability to catapult your business forward in parallel with those creative financing techniques really began to move the needle. So 2013 is a pivot point. And then I got to leave full-time employment in 2018. 2019, we started CLT Buyers, and we've been operating kind of at scale since those times. But it's been a lot of fun. Lots of challenges, but a lot of fun along the way.
I want to go back. You mentioned, like everyone else, you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mean, I've got to fall into that cliche story as well. Like, that's what changed my journey. And there might be somebody listening to this that hasn't heard of it, or they have, and they just haven't read it yet. So if you haven't, that's the very first book you should read. And listen, right, it's not a real estate book. Like, Ed and I are in real estate. Kiyosaki's in real estate. That book's really a better understanding how money works and understanding passive income. And
it's, you can, a motivational get that tool more, yes, than like a manual.
Right. Like, something in your brain will just shift, and it did for me. But I'm curious, like, you've read that book. Obviously, it had a big impact. Was there anything in particular in that book that just really clicked with you that you're like, okay, yeah, this is what I need to do?
Yeah. I had never considered that my upbringing was unique to what other people had experienced. So when Kiyosaki talks about having a rich dad figure in his life, or someone who helped teach him about finance, it occurred to me, wait a minute, I didn't really have those voices in my journey. And because of that, I don't really know the tools that I need to know, which opens the door to, let's go find those tools. Let's go find those voices. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad in and of itself, like you said, it's not really a handbook. It's not a go do this technically, but it opened the mind to, where can I go find those voices, and what inputs can I use to supplement that education?
I appreciate you sharing that, because a lot of time in business and life, you don't know what you don't know. Like, you didn't realize that, hey, I probably need that rich dad figure in my life mentoring me and teaching me these lessons. But once you realize that, like, okay, I know that's missing. Now I got to go find it.
That's right.
And what was that like? Did that happen fairly quickly for you?
No, I think early on it was pretty slow. I mean, look, in 2005, folks are so lucky today. The young folks who are getting started today don't understand, and I know I sound so old when I say it this way too, but they don't understand how easy they have it today. They have Facebook communities and they have bigger pockets and they have YouTube and they have all this content you're putting out, the content we're putting out. You have so much access now that we didn't have back then. And so there were a lot of missteps and fumbles and theories we were testing that we wouldn't apply today. Let me give you an example to be really specific. Early on in my journey, I would have said something like, well, if the property cash flows $200 a door, that's probably a good buy for us. That logic is incomplete and not a metric that I would use to make a decision today. But early on, we didn't know any better, so we had to test that. And so there's just a lot of take the step. Did that feel okay? Take another step. And it's all been an incremental process, I guess. But
I'll tell you right now, any business owner that you're looking, that you're viewing, that you look up to right now, that looks like they have it all together, one, they probably still don't have it all together. And two, it was very progressive along the way. And something I've shared on this podcast is version one is better than version none. You just got to take action.
Oh, I love that.
Let it unravel, right? Like just get started, take steps in the right direction. And you might realize, hey, I need to make a little pivot here, or I need to delegate this to somebody else. But if you're not taking those steps, there's absolutely no way you're going to be able to get to where you want to be. Version one is better than version none.
I love
just
that.
Take action. And I appreciate that experience with you sharing Rich Dad, Poor Dad. For me, I was in the belief, I always wanted to get into real estate. I was taught what I heard, what I believed, what was in my internal belief system is that you had to have money to make money. And this was evident in my life because I wanted to specialize in the medical field, make a few hundred thousand dollars a year, and then get into real estate. That was kind of always my plan. After I read that book, I realized I don't need to be the one with the money. I just got to find the opportunity. And I kid you not, 2 weeks later, we had our first fourplex under contract and purchased. It was a seller carry back deal, happened super quick without any of our own money.
Isn't that wild?
And again, you don't know what you don't know, but the power of that book for me and for Ed was instrumental to the jumpstart of our careers. Now, I wish every deal I bought happened in 2 weeks without any of my own money.
Of course.
It set me up for a false sense of what this real estate game was really like. But again, I think I needed that at that time to see what was possible. The beginner's luck, right? Looking back, that's truly what it was. It was beginner's luck. The stars aligned. Everything worked out. But we took action. And now we're partnering with people and buying multi-million dollar apartment buildings. So it's super exciting and it can happen. So, well, Ed, I know we got off on a little tangent there with Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but that book's actually been recommended a lot, but we haven't really dived into it too much. So thanks for playing along there for a minute.
Hey, it was an important part to our journey.
It was.
We've grown since that and there's other tools we recommend now, but the start of the journey was certainly centered there.
100%. So you mentioned a few minutes ago, things grew, things were great, but there was a lot of challenges along the way. So at what point, one, did you realize that you wanted to really take this business and run with it? And then two, what was one of the first big challenges you can recall in trying to scale?
Yeah. You know, when you're first starting and you've come into the business, you're learning the creative tools that you're talking about, seller carrybacks, or we had done an early lease option on a $1.2 million property here in Charlotte. It was 8 duplexes. Then you're in control of an asset that, if we're being frank, we didn't really have the capital structure, reserves, and team in place to effectively manage. And so what we ended up doing in that case was we ended up spending a lot of time and energy because we didn't have the capital. So the only thing we could really throw at it to fix something was our own time and energy. So looking back, I regret that we spent so much time and energy on that project, knowing that we delayed progress that we would have made in the market if we hadn't had our attention so solely focused on that project. Maybe at the end of the day, it was a requirement because that's just what kind of springboarded a lot of other things, but trying to do it all yourself and not outsourcing, you know, in a way that allows you to be in your core strength, your core genius early on when you're an independent operator and going in all the different directions. I think that's the mistake that we made that I see most commonly made in the business.
So if you could rewind back to that time, what would you do differently?
Hired a property manager from the first unit. We give this advice a lot. I think the most important time to have a property manager is actually when you have like 1 to 10 units. Later, when you have 40 units, when you have 70, you know, however many units you have, you can probably afford to have one person on your team just be the property manager. But if you're taking all the calls for the toilets and tenants and all that stuff, chasing down rent payments, reconciling bank accounts, you're limiting your growth. And so hiring out expertise, whether it's bookkeeping, whether it's property management, whether it's maintenance, we were talking before we jumped on about outsourcing some marketing, some part of the marketing team and the marketing work that we do. All of that is not what guys like you and our core strength is, being operators, working the deal, getting the structure put together, building the relationships. And every moment we're not doing that, we're wasting our expertise.
You often have to ask yourself, like if you're listening to this, ask yourself right now, what is your hourly rate? Now, those that are in a W-2 job, it might be anywhere from $20 an hour to $200 to $300 an hour. Do you believe you could get your hourly rate up to $1,000 an hour, $2,000 an hour? I'm telling you, it's possible if you have the right business and you're working with the right people. So figure out what that hourly rate is and look at these tasks. Let's just say your hourly rate is $200 an hour. How much would you have to pay a bookkeeper to keep track of your finances? 30, 40, 50 bucks an hour, maybe, right? If you want to go offshore, you could probably find somebody to do it for 5, 6, 7, 8 bucks an hour. So use that metric to gauge where and how you should be allocating your time. Now, a question for you, Ed, is say somebody knows this. They're like, yes, I want to delegate. I want to hire someone. I want to hire a property manager. There's literally just no money in the deal. If I hire a property manager, I'm coming out of pocket to pay for this deal. What advice could you give to somebody in that situation?
Don't do the deal.
Don't do the deal.
I mean, I understand people get in deals and they're already stuck and in places. I get it. I've made so many bad decisions that, you know, probably outweigh a lot of the bad decisions that people are weighing. But if we're properly underwriting a deal, we're underwriting it with a management expense. And if it doesn't pencil out at a management expense, in our world, I think a view that's changed over time is, I used to think that a real estate investor's job was just to lowball a property. And I actually don't think that's true. I think our job is to communicate where the market is to buy an asset, given the net income of that property. And part of the net income is making sure we're accounting for management expense and maintenance reserves and things like that. And if we're doing that effectively, I think we're going to be effective in the long run. But when it's early on, back to your question, when it's early on and we're trying to like squeeze a deal in because we're so close and we just want to get our first deal, sometimes, like, what do they say? Once the dog catches the car, what's he going to do then? Sometimes catching that car is the worst thing.
I appreciate you sharing that. And this actually came up on a podcast interview I had yesterday. This gentleman acquired another company, another property management company, ironically, because we're talking about property management. But this couple came to him with the opportunity to buy it. They were older. They wanted to retire. And he knew where his number was. And he's like, this is what I can offer. Obviously, they came in a lot higher and they decided to walk away. And he was okay with that. Yeah. He's like, okay, it doesn't hit my number and that's okay. And I think one of the challenge a lot of new people in real estate make is that they just want that first deal so bad that they make too much of an emotional decision and they get themselves in a bind. It burns bridge. If they brought an investor on, maybe it burns a bridge. It doesn't work out. And they're like, hey, this real estate thing sucks. It's not really for me. It didn't work out. And ironically, in the story this gentleman was sharing the other day, this couple came back to him a few months later to that number that he wanted. Yeah. And he was then able to acquire the business and it worked out very, very well for both people. So what Ed was saying is like, if there's not money, like know your number, you've got to know that number. And listen, I'll be the first one to tell you, I consider myself an intuitive decision maker. I do base a lot of my decisions off how does it feel? How does it look? Right? With, in combination with the numbers, with the underwriting, all the stuff that goes into it. The problem lies is when you come into a deal, and I see this with new people all the time. So if you're listening to this, you want to get in real estate, you're new in real estate, you've got to understand the numbers behind it. Because how do you know what number you've got to be at for that deal to make sense or not if you don't know the numbers. You can't just come in with, listen, as entrepreneurs, business owners, we tend to have this unwavering optimism about everything working out in our favor. And that's why we take the risks and the chances that we do. Do not do that in the beginning. Like, it's great, have that optimism, but bring the logical side into it as well and make that decision. And if that deal doesn't support a property manager or the resources or people that you need to delegate to be effective, like Ed said, don't do it. And know that there's another opportunity that will come. Sure. You got to have that abundance mindset.
Yeah. I mean, and you guys talk about this. I've seen a lot of the content that you guys talk about, but once you get the nuts and bolts of like underwriting the deal, the technicalities of it, then the soft side of evaluating, you know, is this a market I want to be in? Is this operators I want to work with? All that stuff that you guys do so effectively. I think once folks get that first piece down, they can start working on the second piece, which is how does that feel and how does that come together?
Absolutely. So awesome. Well, Ed, take us on to the next part of this journey for you.
Yeah. So again, we figured out how to kind of do this thing at scale. We figured out how to bring other investors along with us. We figured out how to solve complicated, challenging problems. Just like, you know, I know you and I are real estate folks, but for folks who have never dealt with real estate stuff, like one, here's a handful of couple of things we've dealt with recently. We had a family that was three siblings and they had inherited a home. And by the way, the inheritance had happened, they had a distant aunt who owned a portion of the home who they had never spoke with. They didn't know her. They had no way to contact her. And so for like 14 years, this family was trying to sell a property. They contacted us. Our family was able to track down that missing aunt who, when we knocked on her door, she said, no, that's the kid's home, and just signed a quick claim deed, which is a quick way to transfer ownership, obviously. And so she signed the quick claim deed there. And we were able to help the family sell a house and get them to stop paying taxes on a property they didn't want.
14 years.
Another example of where we, you know, you made a great point early on the episode, and I didn't want to kind of interrupt you, but our solutions, the solutions that my company does best or my team does best, are those that are not well served in the open market. So if you have a beautiful home with clear title and you can wait all the time in the world for a family to come along and buy that home, I'm probably not a great solution for you. And by the way, you're not a great use of my resources, right? The more challenging the deal, the more convoluted, the more cloudy the deal, the more important our resources are and the better value we provide. Here's another example of one that we did recently. So we bought a property subject to, which means we took over responsibility for the mortgage on this property. The lady called us on a Thursday and said, hey, I need to close by the following Friday. And kind of long story short here, as we inquired as to why she needed to close by the following Friday, she was accepting a felony plea deal the following Friday. You know, a lot of people may look at that deal and have concerns about, quote unquote, the types of people you're working with and those types of things. But here's the important piece that we take away. Regardless of this lady's actions, her family still needed service and support and help. And we were able to do that. And so I'm really proud of things like that we've been able to do.
I think it's important to highlight those instances because a lot of times real estate investors and people are viewed as taking advantage of. And yeah, it's all about the money. It's all about the wealth. They're greedy. They're slumlords. Listen, I'm not saying there's not people out there like that. There are. There 100% are. Ed and I get extremely frustrated with those types of operators because then it puts a bad taste in people's mouth when we come along and truly have good intentions and want to serve everyone that comes in contact with us, whether it's the tenants, buyers, sellers, whoever it is. So it can be a very incredible way to make an impact on people that I think a lot of people don't realize. And again, maybe it's just one of those things that you don't know what you don't know. So hopefully through our conversation, you're picking up on that. So you mentioned 2013 is when you really started getting into the creative financing space, correct?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different avenues you can go with that. Like creative financing in itself has so many different streams. How long do you feel like it took you to get a good grasp on the basics, if you will?
Probably a good 2 years. You know, even within the creative finance space, you've got to kind of swing it a couple of deals and test out some strategies and some things. For example, I know not every state in the nation can do lease options. We're allowed, like Texas, you can't do them, but we're allowed to do them in North Carolina. And early on, that was a tool we used a lot. I mentioned we had done that on a multifamily, and we did that on some houses as well. But that's generally not a strategy we would use today. It's less preferred than a true seller finance or a subject to for us. And that's primarily because the ownership interest element of whether that changes hands or not. But you've got to get a lot of at-bats to get a kind of initial understanding of creative financing. And then, look, there are things we've learned about notes and hypothecation and selling notes and selling partial notes and wraps, you know, that we've really just learned in the last 2 or 3 years. So I think, like you said, there's just all of these different variants of where you go and how you can learn about this space. But getting at bats is really one of the most important things, in my opinion. And you do that most by just talking with sellers and understanding what they need.
So Ed shared with us, it took him about 2 years before he felt like he started getting a good wrap on the basics. This might surprise a lot of you, Kay. His success didn't come from a 3-day seminar that he attended over the weekend and bought into some $20,000, $30,000 course. Okay. Listen, and I'm not trying to rag on these courses. Like, I know a lot of people that have done very, very well with them. But the problem is, and the challenge is that people lack the discipline to execute on that information they gain from those 3-day weekends. I just told you right now, it took about 2 years to get a good grip on it. And it's really how many times you can get up to bat and swing. Like, it's putting in the reps. It's really putting in the reps. So,
well, and just look, you've got to have deals go sideways. You've got to have deals kind of, the wheels start to fall off the track and you're like, all right, what do we need to do? What's the right way to do this? How can I avoid that happening next time? What process do I need to put in place? What team member needs to keep an eye on rental income, or what team member needs to keep an eye on the insurance on a product, or what team member needs to keep an eye on making sure those mortgage payments are sent out but before the 6th of the month, if that's an important date for that mortgage, or, you know, all of the different things. And it's all process and people related.
You said something like, you've got to have deals go south. You've got to have problems come up. And I sent this morning as I was prepping for my day, I love Ed Milet. Absolutely love the guy. Like, out of all these people out there that are putting out content, business coaches, speakers, something about Ed, I don't know why, just resonates with me. And you probably like him because you guys share the same first name. Ed. But I watched this video this morning about him talking about how indecisive people have a hard time succeeding because they're not taking action. If you guys have listened to Ed Milet, a lot of him is like, get up, take massive action, max out one more rep. It's one more call. But in there, he talks about problems. And this quote just freaking stuck out to me. And I texted it to my entire team this morning. It says, problems are always an indicator that you're making progress.
That's right.
So when Ed just shared with us,
you're going to go somewhere.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when Ed just shared with us a minute ago, like, you need to have those deals go south. When the wheels start going off the track, like, that's good. It's a good thing. So, and it's, listen, our initial instinct is to get pissed off, frustrated. Nothing ever goes my way. Flip the script on that. Okay. If you're experiencing problems, you're learning and you're making progress.
That's right. So we were talking about how kind of the journey has all occurred. So 2013, we started learning those tools. 2018, I got to leave my full-time employment. 2019, I started CLT Buyers. And since 2019, we've been running CLT Buyers as a business. And thankfully, we've been able to attract some great people and, again, established a reputation for ourselves as one of the varsity teams in the space. But probably about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, my business partner, Michael, and I, we looked at each other and we said, I don't think we're solving big enough problems for how effective our team can be. And so we legitimately, intentionally, set off to be more aggressive to create more problems in our business so we could learn to solve more complicated problems. And as a result, the business has been more effective over the last 2 years.
Okay, I want to get into that. I want to figure out like what problems. But before we do, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll come right back to it.
Hey guys, my name's Nate Hare. I'm the executive director at Directed IRA. Directed IRA is a company that exists to provide a solution for people that want to invest their retirement accounts, be it IRAs or old 401ks, into things like real estate or things outside of the stock market. If you want to invest your IRA or old 401k into investments like real estate, apartments, syndications, or the great investments that Rev Equity has to provide, make sure that you reach out to us. You can find our information on investwithrev.com or our website, www.directedira.com. Open a self-directed IRA and invest in alternatives today.
Excellent. Welcome back. Well, right before our commercial break, Ed just shared with us, he's like, they intentionally infused problems into their company to figure out what they could do to elevate and serve people at a higher caliber. So what I want to ask you, Ed, and what I want to dive into is, what were some of those things?
Yeah. So one of the primary problems, this is going to sound very contradictory for someone who's not as close to the business, but here's the problem. When we looked at our performance for the 2 years, again, this was 2 years ago, but when we looked at our performance for the 2 years prior to that, our close rate on our contracts, the percent of contracts that we put under contract versus closed, that ratio was very, very high. It was almost 100%, meaning for every contract we sent out, we ended up buying that property. And
that's a good problem to have, right?
Say it again.
I said, that's a good problem. Everybody wants that.
Everybody wants that. The problem with that is there were probably properties that were a little more on the margin that potentially, had we placed under contract and created due diligence and then worked through the minutiae of whether we needed to renegotiate with the seller, whether we needed to bring in some type of labor experience or a contractor or fix a roof or whatever the problems were, we weren't solving enough problems on the margin to bring those deals in-house. And so we intentionally set out to actually drive down our close rate. We want to be a little closer to about 75%. That still beats the average in our industry. National averages are lower than that. But we wanted to look at opportunities to say we need more problems for the business to solve. And one of the levers we pulled was, let's go get some more properties under contract that are a little more on the margin, and let's see if our team can figure it out. And good news, we've driven the close rate down. So, but it's a lot about setting expectations with your potential customers. It's talking through the process with them. It's educating them so that even if we were to have to walk away from a contract, they deeply understand our decision-making process and why that happened.
This is a very interesting concept because we experience this in the multifamily space. You would think if you have 100 units available at a property, you would want all 100 units filled, right? Logically, you want to be 100% occupied. The challenge here is that you actually don't want to be 100% occupied. If you can stay 93 to 97, that's actually a healthy range. And to somebody listening to this, and this is similar to Ed's situation, why would you want to be less than 100%? It doesn't make sense. Here's the deal. If you're 100% occupied, couple things. One being your rents are probably a little too soft and nobody wants to leave because they know that if they go anywhere else, they're going to pay more for a similar unit. So if you're 100% occupied, it could be an indicator that your rents are soft, which is money left on the table, right? Now, and our goal is not to price people out of their apartment, right? That's not who we are. This is just something to think about if real estate is something you're wanting to get into. Another thing is a lot of these properties, part of the business plan is to get in, take the unit, dump $5,000 to $15,000 into that unit to renovate it, to bring it up a level and charge more for rent. If you're 100% occupied, now you got to start kicking people out to renovate those units, but that doesn't make sense. You don't want to kick people out. So having that 93, 97% range of occupancy allows you to execute on your business plan and really capitalize on adjusting to the market. And it sounds very similar to what you're talking about, Ed.
When we talk to when we look at, we're not in the large multifamily space at all, but when we talk to mid-sized multifamily operators, 20, 30 units, something like that, they'll say to us, we haven't had a vacancy in 3 years, as if that's some type of flex. And I'm going, huh.
That's opportunity if you're a buyer.
Oh, absolutely. But, it's one of those, I don't think you're saying what you think you're saying when you're saying that there.
Yeah. Yeah.
We love it. Those understandings are important.
So you share that first. That was one of the first problems that you recognized and you wanted to actually decrease your close rate. What was something else that you recognized that you implemented to really take your team to that next level?
Ooh, this is a good one. So we grew a team from 2019 into 2022, the beginning of 2023. And, you know, those were some tough years. COVID was out there. Getting into see homes was a challenge. So there were a lot of difficulties. And our team, through the process of like, let's face more challenges, became relatively experienced. Again, we're one of the varsity teams in the Charlotte market. We talk about that publicly. We wear branded caps. We do all our different things. But what we learned was there were teams that were earlier on their journey than us that weren't as developed as we are that would benefit from being able to take advantage of some of the relationships and systems that we've built. So a very natural progression of our business was actually to offer transaction coordination services to those who were earlier on the journey. And having developed the core competency in-house, being able to kind of offer those services to others has been really cool.
And by the transaction coordination, for those that are unfamiliar, these people would go out, source the deal, find it, and then you would just help close it. Walk them
contract to close. Yep. So we're managing all the title processes, all the inspections, all the seller communication, all the buyer communication, because our team has become experts at being soft at how we deliver, walking on eggshells over this issue. We've really began to understand that. So then outsourcing it to someone who may not have the experience and being able to help them get across the finish line as a result has been really rewarding.
Again, and it creates a win-win, not just for you and that person that utilizes your services, but also for the seller. Because if you guys can come in and help with a smooth close and a surety of close, I mean, I'm sure that's probably one of the things that you really push in your business. That creates a win-win-win.
Absolutely. So, and again, we're working, you know, in the same ecosystem of all of our attorneys most commonly used. If we need an inspection, if we need all the different things, they're all people who we're very familiar with. So it's like showing up to the same party every Friday. Y'all know your role and you go off and do it. So
I love it. And listen, this is a good reminder. I don't care what business you're in or that you have interest in starting or beginning. You may not at all have any interest in real estate, but I know there's at least some nuggets that you gained from our interview today with Ed. What I'm saying is whatever business you have interest in, find somebody that's already done it. Find somebody that's been through the ringer that you can lean on. And yes, maybe that's delegating the transactional coordination services, hiring someone else to do it. Sometimes you have to pay to play, but you find somebody that's been through it, you are going to go so much further, so much quicker with the right partnerships and the right relationships. Stop thinking you can do it all on your own.
Absolutely.
And one of my biggest pet peeves, I hate the phrase and I hate the term a self-made millionaire. I feel like, and I believe it comes from a very egoic state of mind, because in reality, nobody that's created a very successful business has done it on their own. And as soon as you throw that word self in there, it drives me nuts, because they're not giving credit to those that helped them to get to where they are. You can't do it alone. You've got to have a team. You've got to have the right partners. And there are good people out there that want to help you and can help you. So whatever industry you're in, whatever business you're interested in, find somebody already doing it. I'm telling you, the first two might say no. If you ask them like, hey, can I learn from you? They might say no. The first 10 might say no. You keep asking, you're going to find somebody that sees a lot of themselves in you when they were getting started. Now you got yourself a mentor. And you're going to go so much further, so much quicker by attaching yourself to that person.
Strongly agree with you.
So, Ed, what do you think it was that's really helped your company get to where it is today?
So, mentioned it once or twice in our discussion, but maybe just to dive into one thing. So, we're one of the varsity teams in the Charlotte market. We carry that moniker very literally. As a result of that, we have spent the better part of 8 or 9 years now developing a community around us. And what I mean is intentionally developing a community around us. So for example, we run a local monthly meetup, and that's an opportunity for those who are around to come and learn some specific subject matter thing in an evening and then get to know others in the space. And that's one way that we've set ourselves apart. Heck, we were hosting that meetup before we were probably well qualified to host that meetup. Thankfully, now the business has kind of caught up, so we can speak to a couple of things from a position of legitimacy. But how else could I build a relationship with my attorney where he would come out to one of my events other than to say, hey, man, I'm getting some people in a room. Would love if you'd come answer some questions that I have about subject twos, as an example. So that's one thing we've done. We've compounded that with, we offer every Thursday. So once a week in our office for 2 hours, it's every Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. We open up our office doors and we have something we call office hours. And that is a networking working time where we'll work through deals. We'll talk about subject matter. This week, our subject matter happens to be using online tools to complete due diligence is what we're happen to be talking about this week. But those are opportunities for folks who have done zero deals, for folks who have done five deals. We've got friends who do a lot of deals that come. But setting ourselves apart as someone who folks have access to has been really a game changer for us. And when I talk about that, I can be very literal about it. Our business, depending on the way we define lead, but our cost per lead for a closed contract can be north of like $3,000 or $4,000. Half of our business are developed just from our network, our free leads. So we're avoiding spending $4,000 for every one of those deals. And just an example, if some deals are small, you might only make $10,000 or $12,000 on a deal. You might make $20,000 on a deal, but that can begin to stack up pretty substantially. And so developing a reputation and a willingness to help people, and then being very clear about where it crosses the line between, I'm willing to help you. You know, this is free advice. I know you can go out and do it, but if you want our team to come in and use our resources, here's where it starts, has been really effective.
You've got to set that boundary for yourself for sure, especially if you're experienced in the space. And what Ed's talking about with the meetup, I love meetups. That's how we got started with our brand and our exposure here in Arizona. What he's talking about is having a thought leadership platform. And he even said, like, hey, we probably started that thing way sooner than we were probably qualified to. I was in the same freaking boat. But here's the deal. When you host an event like that, and this is something that you got to realize, if you're considering starting an event, starting a meetup, you don't have to be the industry expert. All you've got to do is get people there.
That's right.
And so when we started a meetup and we wanted to become the premier apartment investing meetup in the state of Arizona. And we did. And it took time to get to that point, but I didn't know it all. I had some experience and I was passionate about learning. I wanted to learn from people that had way more experience than me. So having that platform, having that meetup, it allowed me to go to people and be like, hey, Ed, I've got this meetup. We got about 60 people that come out every month that are all interested in learning about apartments. I know you manage about 200 to 300 units. Would you mind coming out and talking to our group?
That's right.
And what do people like talking about the most?
Themselves.
Themselves, right? So you have a platform. You don't have to be the expert. You invite the expert. You get credibility just for packaging it and bringing it all together. It could be a very, very powerful way to get started. Podcasting is another thought leadership platform, right? I've connected with so many very successful business owners on this show simply because I have a podcast. Inviting them to share their journey because they know that when they got started, there was people that they looked up to, right? So this podcast even provides a community within itself. Now, unfortunately, we haven't done anything with it yet because we're a few months in, but how cool would it be to create a community around this podcast with entrepreneurs across all different industries coming together for one event for 1 or 2 days a month? That would be pretty epic.
That'd be cool.
Pretty sweet.
So, you know, you got my support when that starts.
Awesome. But yeah, what Ed's talking about is having that thought leadership platform. And it is so, so very important. And again, if there's anything you got from him so far this episode, just take freaking action and get comfortable with being uncomfortable. He got too comfortable. And so they physically put their team into situations that made him more uncomfortable because they knew that with problems, there would be progress. And if they weren't experiencing enough problems, they were plateauing.
That's it.
Okay. one last thought on that, and then we got to start wrapping up. If you were ever like me getting started thinking that your journey in business is going to have a final destination, you're in for a rude awakening. It is very much like chasing the horizon, right? You could see the horizon, you could see the goal, you could see where you want to go. As you get closer to that horizon, what does it keep doing?
It keeps moving on you.
It keeps moving. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. Okay. And what you've got to realize in the world of business, in the world of entrepreneurship, it's really about the journey. It's about the journey, the relationships, the impact you can make along the way. So stop telling yourself it will be better when, and figure out how to make it better today. So Ed, this has been incredible. Thanks so much for your time. What's next for CLT?
Yeah. We love what we do. And there's often folks who talk about trying to go into different geographies or different asset classes. I think for us, it's really just continue to do what we're doing, grow the rental portfolio over time. If some adjustments come in these rates, there may be some opportunities in the subject to world. So those are all things we're looking at. But I don't really see us diversifying out of what we're doing. We're very happy with what we're doing. Right on track to what we want to do. So it's really just an execution phase for us. I think there's some secondary verticals that come sometime next year, but all of that is just ancillary services and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, Ed, as we wrap this up, there's four questions I like to ask every guest that we've had on the show. The first one being, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
So I'm going to get away with two. I'll just flash one of them because I know you know these guys. Shout out to the team at Directed IRA. I know you had Nate on a webinar just recently. So the Self-Directed IRA Handbook. If folks are interested in either raising private funds themselves or utilizing funds that they have set aside, they need to read that book. A common step that we'll do is we'll send this book to one of our private lenders, our prospective private lender. We'll send them the book and we'll say, hey, we'd love to grab a lunch with you in a couple of weeks. Why don't you read the book and we'll talk about it over lunch. So that's a really, really common tool that we'll use. But the book I would recommend is The Debt Millionaire, George Anton. I'm coming up his name, George Anton. This is, so we talked about how Rich Dad, Poor Dad was kind of the start of the journey. I always equate The Debt Millionaire, and it's a small book, pretty readable, but it takes a little bit of time to digest. It's actually kind of heavy reading. But if you think about on a spectrum, Dave Ramsey being here, right? Like buy in cash. And then you've got Kiyosaki in the middle with, hey, leverage is really great for real estate. In fact, it's kind of a unique thing. The Debt Millionaire is kind of the most extreme version of that. And it just talks about how important utilizing debt as a part of your real estate journey is. And a lot of people would really benefit from understanding this book. So that's my book recommendation, The Debt Millionaire.
Love it. Debt can be a very, very powerful tool if used properly, just like any other tool. Tools can be used for good and for harm. So Ed, what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
Okay. So this is, can I read? The quote's a little long. Can I read it for you? But
yeah.
One people have given you, but this is a quote actually I have had in my world. As a teenager, I had it like on a printed piece of paper up on my wall. And it's really meant a lot to me. As I think about business, one of our mentors talks about there's really three phases in business. You're either in chaos, you're coming out of chaos, or you're going back into chaos. Thankfully, right now, our business is in a place where we're kind of going out of chaos, which is fun, but it just means the next phase is going to be a little challenging. But here's the quote. It's not the critic who counts. It's the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at best knows the end of triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls, neither know victory nor defeat. Business owners have to live by that. If you are not in the ring, you're not there. And by the way, for those who aren't in the ring with you, their voices don't matter for anything. So drown out all the social noise, drown out any of the haters, you know, all that. Like, who cares? Just get in the arena with your team and fight it out. That's
powerful. As you were reading that, I couldn't help but to think of the movie The Gladiator.
Heck yeah.
right? Like, I couldn't think of a better example of just getting in done. So awesome. Ed, if there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners over these years of experience that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
Yeah, build a team who sees the vision and who's willing to get in the trench. You know, I'm a military guy. We've talked about that a little bit, but if they're not willing to get in the trench with you, they're not the right members. You shouldn't have to talk people into what your vision is. If they don't have the burning desire internal to them, there's not a lot you can do to incentivize them and get the right people in place and then go to battle.
Well said. Well, Ed, how can our listeners learn more about you and your company?
We'd love folks to follow our journey. We're on all social media platforms as @CLTBuyers. Instagram's probably the most interesting one people can follow. We do silly things about our, you know, day in the real estate life, and we'll, you know, tease each other, and you guys will see us at our networking events and at projects and all that type of stuff. So Instagram is probably one of the best places for folks to find us. If there's anyone out there who's interested in investing specifically in the Charlotte market, I'd be happy to talk with you. Message us on Instagram and we'll set up some time to have a conversation.
Awesome. Excellent. Look, this has been an incredible conversation with Ed. And if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. My company partners with busy professionals just like Ed that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. At Rev, we found that the most successful business owners have a strong desire to give and serve, and we simply provide the vehicle to enable them to grow and preserve their wealth so they can give of their time and financial success more abundantly and freely. If you've been wanting to get involved in apartment investing, but have been too busy to figure out where or how to start, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting investwithrev.com and schedule a 15-minute discovery call. It could be very overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make apartment investing easy. Ed, again, man, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your years of experience and being open about the challenges that you guys have experienced. I think that that says a lot about who you are and just your desire to help others in the space.
Thank you so much, man. It's been great to be on the show.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there, earn your money for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.